Good morning, Your Honors. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks.
Good. My name is Stephen Billy. I'm an attorney with Billy and Celi. I represent Gene Forbes Enterprises, doing business as McDonald's of Tazewell and their workers' compensation insurance carrier, Arch Insurance. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
Your Honors, this case arises out of a claim filed by Ms. Cooper asserting that she suffered an injury to her neck on September 3rd, 2013. She's alleged that she was working for McDonald's and she was injured when she was working through the drive-thru. A bag of French fries that she was attempting to bring to the drive-thru window started to slip or become unsteady, and she bent forward simply at the waist to try to stabilize it. She's asserted disability moving forward from the date of the alleged accident all the way through the present and continuing related to this simple physical act. Rather than going through the medical evidence, which has been briefed extensively by both parties, I'm going to jump right to the legal arguments.
Please, thank you. Okay.
In this case, the claimant failed to prove an injury by accident arising out of her employment. As we know, in workers' compensation, there are two prongs. There's in the course of and arising out of. And the arising out of prong says that we have to find something specific related to the injury, something unusual to make the incident described arise out of the employment. In this case, there is no such proof.
On brief, you contest the fact that there was an injury by accident. It seems in your argument you're abandoning that and going to the purely legal standard of review. Are you abandoning it or
I am not. I'm not, Your Honor. I'm just trying to go through arguments in order. If you'd like, I can address that argument first.
I just wanted to know what you were doing.
Go ahead. All right. I will move to that one first. We will contest. I'll come back to arising out of. We contest that there was no injury by accident. Specifically, what we contest in that regard is that there was no evidence of a sudden mechanical or structural change to the body.
Well, there was her testimony that she heard and felt a sudden tear at the time of the incident. Historically, hasn't that been sufficient to satisfy evidence, given that the deputy commissioner and the commission found that to be credible?
I think that historically it is not sufficient, Your Honor. I think that traditionally the courts turn to the medical evidence first to try to determine whether there's been a sudden mechanical structural change to the body, and in this case there is no such medical evidence. I think that in this case, as briefed extensively, Ms. Cooper had a long and substantial history of neck complaints, starting with an MRI in 2010. She was treating for neck complaints that she said radiated into her shoulder, the exact same symptoms all through 2013, went to see a neurosurgeon who performed another MRI in February of 2013.
But even an exacerbation of a pre-existing condition would be a compensable injury if there were the sudden mechanical change on the job, et cetera.
Right? I agree, Your Honor. The case law dictates that an exacerbation of a pre-existing injury can be a sudden mechanical and structural change. But there are also cases, one of which was cited in my brief.
And you can see that the commission found that there was such a sudden mechanical change.
I do not, Your Honor. What I concede is the commission noted that there was a neck injury. I would also argue that the commission never specified what the neck injury was.
Well, implicitly in finding that it was a compensable claim, didn't they definitionally have to find that there was a sudden mechanical change?
The law would require it, Your Honor, and I guess my assertion would be that they skipped that step. They essentially...
Do you think they forgot or ignored it?
I think they ignored it, Your Honor. I think that in trying to find a neck injury, which was important based on the other arguments of, which I'll get to shortly in terms of them trying to award a body part that was never claimed, I think that they rushed and tried to find a neck injury, although there was no evidence of an actual neck injury. And so I think they skipped that step. I think they skipped the step of trying to find a sudden mechanical structural change or finding proof of it. I think that particularly persuasive in this regard is the fact that the pre-alleged injury, MRI of February 2013 and the September 20th, 2013 post-alleged injury MRI were relatively identical, which was found by every doctor in the case, including the claimant's expert.
Is it your position that the Workers' Compensation Act does not give compensation for soft tissue injuries that don't show up on radiographic studies?
It would be my position, Your Honor, that they would have to find what the specific soft tissue injury is. And I think that even Dr. Swanson, which is the expert upon which the claimant relies, found that there was no objective evidence of a sudden mechanical structural change to the claimant's body. I think at most he said he would have to defer to her credibility or her testimony that she felt that her conditions were different after the alleged accident than before. But I would argue that's not supported by the medical records. I would also argue that it's interesting in this case that this lady, in her last visit on July 11, 2013, to a doctor, actually indicates in that record that she thought she was going for pain management treatment, meaning, you know, after this alleged incident, for reasons that are unexplained, she went to a totally different physician, and then rather than the family doctor she had been seeing, and then she basically, after seeing that doctor for a short period of time, Ms. Chastity Walker, then switched to a pain management physician. It's my argument that this is just a continuation of the pre-existing problems and that there is no sudden mechanical or structural change in this case. Additionally, moving on to the arising out, or back to the arising out of prong, I would just assert that there is no evidence in this case of an unusual act. It was just the simple act of bending forward, and there are multiple cases decided by this court and by the commission that have indicated that simple acts of bending are not compensable absent some unusual work-related exertion. It's a risk of the street.
Is it the fact that it was a sudden motion to steady or catch a work-related product that plays no role in the analysis?
Your Honor, I don't think that makes it an unusual movement. I mean, you have a bag weighing 1.5 pounds that she testifies she's holding at waist level. She says that it becomes unsteady, and she just bends forward to reach up with her hand to stabilize it. I just don't think that that's an unusual enough act such that it's something that we don't all face in everyday life. I mean, this happens to all of us, and there's nothing basically related to her employment that shows she was exposed to an increased risk of this motion or this act, which is, once again, just a normal risk. I think that's not enough to prove a rising out.
If you only look at the actual mechanical movement of the body, I mean, pretty much every job has normal body movements in it. Short of an NFL game, where would there be, I mean, wouldn't your interpretation swallow the entire rule?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so, because I think you could have unusual movements which would be rapidly bending all the way from a standing position to touch your toes, or it would be bending while carrying extreme weight, or an awkward twisting motion. There are cases that cite that. None of that's true here. The testimony she has is that she simply was carrying the bag, it started to become unstable, and she bent forward at the waist and reached out with a hand to stabilize it. And I would just argue that's not sufficient under the Act. In terms of moving beyond arising out of, we've also asserted that an error with the Commission's opinion is that they awarded an unclaimed body part. Specifically, the claim for benefits in this case was filed for a neck injury on October 8, 2013. The appellee prior to the hearing attempted to modify in a pre-hearing statement by listing left shoulder as one of the injuries.
In its opinion, the commission specifically says it's not doing that. And so I wonder, by framing your assignment of error that they awarded benefits for a body part not claimed and the commission explicitly says it did not do that, how do we reach the issue given that your assignment of error is about something the commission says it did not do?
Because, Your Honor, although they say that the deputy commissioner didn't do that, what they say is that they found that basically an award for a neck injury was sufficient to encompass an injury to the trapezius that produced symptoms in the neck and shoulder. And so even though they're saying they're not doing that, they're saying that a claim for a neck is sufficient to also award a trapezius injury that then causes symptoms to the neck and shoulder. And this is one of the fundamental problems in the case. If there was a neck injury, why are they finding that the trapezius is causing symptoms in the neck and shoulder? It simply doesn't make any sense. And I would argue that what actually happened in this case is the claimant or the appellee tried to list it in a pre-hearing statement that the shoulder was claimed, and then the deputy commissioner specifically at hearing said, I'm not going to allow that because no claim has been filed for the shoulder or shoulder-related conditions, and said that would violate, and I think a due process objection was noted at that time. And then what happened is, upon reviewing the evidence, I believe that the deputy commissioner and the commission determined that it was actually a trapezius. What they were actually trying to find was a trapezius injury, which is a muscle stretching into the shoulder, and thus they tried to modify a defective claim. And I would argue that due process does not allow that to take place. It doesn't allow it to take place after hearing. It doesn't allow it to take place in the review level because there's no opportunity to defend.
Your theory appears to require the commission to have flagrantly ignored its own rules, its own law, and everything it's supposed to do, and it seems that that seems to be the consistent theme throughout your assignments of error. Is there any particular reason the commission would do this to your particular employer?
Your Honor, I can't assert that the commission has some bias towards my employer. I mean, there's nothing that I saw at that. I believe that this case proceeded. I could point to some of the evidentiary rulings at hearing, which were also briefed, and which are also issues before this court. But I would argue that there's no evidence of inherent bias against Gene Forbes Enterprises or McDonald's by the commission generally.
So that they just had a really bad day?
Or, Your Honor, I would say that perhaps they just made error. I think that judicial bodies are flawed, and they try to do the best they can, but it doesn't mean that they always make correct rulings on the fact and law, or else this court wouldn't exist.
Well, I agree with that, but your theory is that they've ignored their basic law throughout the proceedings.
That is my argument, Your Honor. I think they have, and I think I briefed that in detail. And so I would also argue that there's a jurisdictional issue here, which is that you can't, it's a maximum of jurisprudence in Virginia that you can't award a body part that hasn't been claimed, or you can't award something that hasn't been claimed. No claim for, there are cases, and I cited some in my brief, Boyd versus Boyd, where that this court ruled you can't award, for example, spousal support at trial if there's no claim for spousal support pending before the trial court. And I would say the same things happen here. The commission essentially awarded treatment for a body part or an injury to a body part, the trapezius, or treatment related to the trapezius, and that was never claimed.
In my experience, claims for injury don't get down to the specific actual muscle. They tend to be more generic, back, neck, shoulder. The trapezius is in what is commonly known as the neck. I mean, granted, it extends to other parts of the body. Why isn't identifying it as a neck injury, if it is, in fact, an injury to the trapezius, sufficient? Or is it your position they actually have to specify trapezius?
I'm out of time.
No, well, you're in your rebuttal time. You can answer that.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll answer that and then reserve the rest of my rebuttal time. Your Honor, my argument would be that the trapezius, as defined even in the briefs, is a broad muscle group that stretches across the back that touches the shoulder or the neck and the lower back. By that definition, essentially a claimant could claim a neck, and then the commission could find lower back, trapezius, shoulder, and I just don't think it's that expansive. And the reason for that is we have to have an opportunity to defend. In this case, we never had a chance to get an expert witness to address the trapezius. We never had a chance to do more questioning of the claimant in deposition or at hearing on the trapezius or trapezius claims, or to do further questioning of their experts on those issues. And that's why it's a denial of due process.
Mr. Hurt, and while you're coming up, just so I don't forget to ask, in the appellant's brief, they've suggested that the style of the case needs to be adjusted slightly so that it's Gene Forbes Enterprises doing business as McDonald's of Tazewell. Is that something to which you agree?
We don't oppose that, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the court, I represent the claimant, Janice Cooper. The court should uphold the commission's award in all respects. Let me address the arising out of issue first. The claimant was working at the drive-thru window. She was holding a bag that already had two containers of French fries. She was placing a third bag in, a third container, and the bag slipped. She bent over very quickly to grab the bag, and then she felt instant pain and hurt a tear. The commission found the claimant's testimony was credible in all respects, and this court should look at the record in the light most favorable to the commission's holding. This was no simple act of bending, as defendants try to characterize it as. This was a sudden, unexpected movement. And it's a movement that not only was sudden and unexpected, but it involved a grabbing. It was impulsive. This was, as a result, it was awkward and a jerking motion.
Is there other objective testimony? That seemed to be one of the points that the appellant was making, was that there was nothing for objective medical evidence to support a sudden mechanical change. Granted, there was a lurching activity, and the claimant felt a change, but was there any other medical evidence to support that?
Yes, both the nurse practitioner Walker and the doctor
Swanson.
Both they did detailed examinations of her, noticed spasms in the trapezius area and pain, lack of mobility. All of those things add up to an injury. And so they saw her several times. And even although you don't need to look at the possibly conflicting medical evidence, even Dr. Vazek says it's musculoskeletal in nature, her injury. So we think that there's plenty of evidence, much more than the minimum necessary to uphold the commission's finding on that. As far as the body part is concerned, I think Judge Russell hit it right hit the nail right on the head. The commission was very careful in their ruling on this, and the commission said the deputy commissioner found muscle spasms in the neck were producing shoulder symptoms, and the neck injury encompassed an injury to the trapezius muscle, which produced symptoms in the neck and shoulder. The trapezius muscle is indisputably part of the neck. And so here, I think it's, as this court knows, many, many claimants are unrepresented. And it's a long tradition of the commission to allow claimants to just put layman's terms for body parts. They don't expect them to write trapezius or specific muscle group and in technical terms, and that gives plenty of notice to an employer what the injury is. And so I agree with Judge Russell's point that there was no award to the shoulder and that the award did encompass the injury at issue, which was the injury to the trapezius. Or at least encompass that injury. Going back to the jerking and awkward motion, I think that the Grider case, 9 Virginia Appeal 60, is a very similar situation where the woman was sitting on a chair and she had a jerking motion that caused an injury, and she had pre-existing injuries, which was the case here. And I'd like to point out that while Ms. Cooper had significant pre-existing injuries or pre-existing conditions, she had not missed any work for this pain. She's a 23-year veteran of this franchise, and it was undisputed that she had not missed any work for this neck and back pain that she was pre-existing. I'd like to address the exclusion of Dr. Vazek's questionnaire. Just to reiterate quickly the situation there. This one or two page questionnaire was thrown in with hundreds of pages of submissions at 7 o'clock in the evening the night before the hearing. There was no pointing out that this was never produced to us. I had a wonderful paralegal that found it. And that was the only reason we knew that was in there. We think that our position is that the deputy commissioner's action on this was very reasonable, very proportionate. He only excluded that one page. He didn't exclude all of Dr. Vazek's medical records, only the one questionnaire. And
was there anything on the page of Dr. Vazek's excluded questionnaire to demonstrate how far in advance of the hearing that questionnaire had been received by the carrier?
Yes, it was months in advance.
Okay.
And really, if the deputy commissioner is not allowed under Rule 112 to take an action which was very proportionate and tailored to the offense, then basically the deputy commissioner is going to lose control over the hearing. Because if the only thing the deputy commissioner can say is, okay, plaintiff, you can claim that you can take the deposition. That's just inviting massive abuse of this rule, and basically will result in it being not enforced. Again, the as far as the disability goes, Dr. Swanson was clear that she is out of work. She cannot return to work. All it takes, even if his cited case law, even if his opinions are somewhat in conflict, which I don't think they are, even so, the commission, it's their job to weigh the credibility, and as long as anything in Dr. Swanson's testimony and medical record supports that, then this court should uphold the commission's ruling on that issue. I really think that's all the points that I have, if there's no questions.
Hearing none, we thank you very much, sir. Rebuttal, Mr. Billy?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, just as initial matter, I would just note that in argument of counsel for the appellee, he noted that first, in terms of whether a body part was claimed, the tradition of pro se litigants, we didn't have a pro se litigant here. We had a litigant represented by counsel. And to show that there wasn't necessarily confusion, there was a last-second attempt to list shoulder on the pre-hearing statement. And then, so it shows that there was knowledge even before the claim. They elected to proceed for a claim for the neck only. And I think that's an important distinction in this case. With regard to the exclusion of evidence, we would argue that there was an abuse of discretion here in this case in excluding the Dr. Vasek questionnaire. It's the position of the appellant that by Rule 22b4, medical evidence, if designated, will be admitted. The designation was filed the night before. I think it's been briefed that there was an error. Counsel for the appellant acknowledged the error in not producing it earlier due to some confusion related to a continuance. And what happened in this situation is there were a number of options given to try to make sure that it minimized impact in the case and that all of the essential evidence was before. Dr. Vasek's questionnaire was important. It addressed causation. It addressed disability. He was a treating physician. All of these things were important. We offered to have the record be left open. We offered to pay for the deposition. We offered those remedies which would have protected the claimant. In this case, the only argument really made was increased cost to claimant's counsel. The record was already being left open for Dr. Swanson's deposition, so it wasn't even that the record had to be left open for this. It was already being left open because Dr. Swanson failed to appear at hearing despite being subpoenaed.
But that was not under the control of one of the parties. That was Dr. Swanson not honoring a subpoena. The problem with your record is entirely within the control of one of the parties. And of course, if it was such an important document, why wasn't it produced in accordance with the commission's rules and in accordance with your discovery obligation?
Your Honor, I can see that there are separate situations, but my argument is, and as I said, we conceded even at hearing, as you've noted from the transcript, that it was an error and that it was inadvertently made and took responsibility for it. But I think that the law requires that judicial bodies use the least means possible to sanction. And here, it was a draconian method of excluding essential evidence. And I just think that's impermissible. I think that there were methods made available to the commission by which they could allow the evidence in, have all the evidence even before this tribunal, and they chose to exclude and punish severely.
All right. Thank you very much. In keeping with the court's tradition, we will come down and greet counsel, and then we'll deviate a little bit from our norm. We will take a very brief recess and then come back and take up the case of Collins versus the Commonwealth.